This Shabbos, we are zocha to begin the reading of Sefer Dvarim with, of course, Parshat Dvarim. And Sefer Dvarim is something, or is a Sefer, that there's so much discussion about. We know that it was given the term from Chazal called the Mishneh Torah, which means the repetition of the Torah. And it's so fascinating, this work, because it's not really a story. It's not a narrative in the way that Bereishis is the narrative of the beginning of creation, the beginning of humanity, the beginning of the Jewish people. Shmos, of course, is the book of the Exodus. The Sefer Geula, which was termed not just for the Exodus, but for the building of the Mishkan. Vayikra, also a narrative of sorts of the responsibility of the Kohanim, of Kedusha, the Avodah Beis HaMikdash, Kedusha of Zman, of time, Kedusha of Israel. Bamidbar, of course, is the story of the travel through the desert with some of the very heightened moments, but many of the moments of downfall of the sin of the spies, and et cetera, et cetera. Dvarim has none of that. Dvarim is simply Moshe Rabbeinu acting really as the leader of the nation, acting as the maternal figure of the nation, the paternal figure, the Rebbe of the nation, giving his last speech. And as a result, it very much has a more personal feeling. Almost imagine a Rebbe saying goodbye to his Talmidim, a grandfather surrounded by his children and grandchildren, giving his last goodbye as well. And as a result, Dvarim is sort of a much more personal sefer, as opposed to a sefer of stories and lessons. I want to point out, first of all, those who are listening, I apologize, we're having some construction done in the house, so it might be a little bit noisy in the background. Point out that the sefer is broken down into three sections. The sefer is really supposed to be Moshe repeating a lot of the mitzvot. The word Dvarim, Ela Dvarim, is talking about these are the things, namely the commandments, the obligations. But the beginning of the sefer and the end of the sefer is not just a mention or a repetition of the mitzvot, but the beginning of the sefer begins with Moshe Rabbeinu's very strong mussar to the nation of what had happened in the past, their forefathers with the sin of the Meraglim, all the mistakes that were made until now, and Moshe giving strength to these people of do not let the same thing happen to you. And do not be concerned, do not be afraid. Look what's happened in Midbar as far as defeating the king of Sichon and the king of Og, and you should have strength as you move forward into the next stage of the development of the Jewish people. So that's the beginning. Three or four prakim is the mussar. And the last number of prakim is really Moshe's goodbye. Moshe bestowing bracha upon the nation. Moshe beseeching the nation to choose life as opposed to death, to choose good as opposed to choose evil. Moshe assembling everyone for a bris for the entire nation of Arvos, of commitment to each other. Moshe's last words, Moshe's last brachos, and the middle section, which is most of the Dvarim, beginning with the beginning of Hanan and going almost to the end, really deals with the mitzvot. And there's something that is commented on by the great Abarbanel in his Perish Chumash, and that's the following in regards to the first section, the more, as we might call it, the Tochacha, the Mutzer, the Moshe Rabbeinu gave. If you go through the first few prakim, the emphasis of that mussar deals with what happened when it came to the Meraglim. That the nation surrounded Moshe, as Rashi points out, they came, the Eruvia, they came with a big commotion, demanding to send in spies, and then the people who said, Lo Nala, we cannot go up. But there's really nothing mentioned in this section about the other sins that took place, at least not explicitly. If Moshe was giving mussar to this nation, to this generation, about the sins of the father, so why not also speak about Chet Ego, the sin of the golden calf? Why not speak about other rebellions that took place in the Midbar from the first generation? Why only focus here on the Chetam Raglim instead of expanding the scope of the Musar that Moshe Rabbeinu gave to this generation, to the children of those who sinned by the Meraglim? Why limit it to only the Chetam Raglim? It's a fascinating question. So David Tzvi Hoffman, who was the head of Hildesheimer, a person we mentioned many times before, a real fascinating individual of a combination of tremendous depth of learning, both a certain academic interest as well, and his Tvarim and Chumash tend to be a little bit more academic, focus a little more on explaining nuances in the language. So David Tzvi Hoffman offered the following insight, which I think is very simple, very accurate, but at least to me, it was meaningful. Namely, that's the following. Moshe Rabbeinu had no desire to rehash everything that happened until now. Oh, let me tell you another thing about your forefathers, by Chet Egel. Oh, let me tell you another thing about your forefathers, by the May Meriva, or by other places. He wanted to only give the Mussar as it related to what this generation themselves will be going through as they enter into Eretz Yisrael. So as he tells them, Va'omar Lechem, this is Devarim Perek Aleph, Pasuk Chaf and Pasuk Aleph, Basim Adhar HaMori, Asher Hashem Elokeinu Noten Lanu, you have come until the mountain of Emori, namely entering into Eretz Yisrael, Re'ei Noten Hashem Elokecha Lefanecha Taret. You see, God has given in front of you this land of Israel. Alei Reish Kasher Diber Hashem Elokecha, Loch Altira V'Altecha. Go forward, do not fear, do not be dismayed. And the reason that Moshe Rabbeinu was giving the Musar about the Meraglim was is because it was exactly parallel to the experience of their forefathers who came to Meraglim. The nation was ready to go in. The nation had seen miracles in their day. The nation were coming on the heels of the experiences of Yitzias Mitzrayim and Kriyas Yam Suf and Matan Torah, but yet they became afraid. They became fearful. They said, let us die here in the desert. Let us go back to Mitzrayim. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu encouraging them now, do not allow the sins of the forefathers, the sins of your fathers be visited upon you. Now, do not be afraid. Al-Tira of the Al-Techas. Moshe didn't have the need to rehash everything. He was simply giving Mussar in a way that would be something that was meaningful, something that was directive, something that was informative for this generation and the travails and the travels that they're going to be experiencing in the very near future. The lesson from Moshe Rabbeinu is clear. Namely, if person A gives person B Mussar Tochacha, a father or mother have to instruct their children, or they might be upset of their children, a husband to a wife to a husband, a Rebbe to a Talmud. It's ineffective, it's inappropriate, and quite honestly, it's usher to start doing, I guess, what we would call in modern-day parlance, just kitchen sinking, to go through a whole litany of what your kid or your husband or your friend has done in the past. You want to make it very clear, very specific, in a way that the person, or in this case, the nation, can grow from. But Mussar and Tochacha are not a way of just laying the person out and letting loose because, you know, I feel upset. Moshe probably felt upset about things that happened in the past, but he put that aside just to focus on what was relevant and what was specific to this case. This model of Tochacha is something that we see in many places, including in this week's Parsha. We know the parasha begins, Ela Hadvarim, just to read the pasuk again, it's familiar to all who are listening. Ela Hadvarim Asher Diber Moshe El Kol Yisrael, Be'ezra Yardin. These are the things, namely the mitzvot, which Moshe spoke to the Nisrael, Ba'midbar, Ba'arava, Mol Suf, Ben Paran, Ben Tofel, Ve'lovan, Ve'chatzera, Sevi Zahav. Now all these names at the end, Midbar, Arava, Mol Suf, Ben Paran, Ben Tofel, Lavan, Chaseros, Izahav, Rashi, quoting from the Medrash, points out that this was a gentle Musar that Moshe Rabbeinu, not explicitly, it was only the sin of the Meraglim, but implicitly reminding them of the various things that had taken place in all of these locations, in Midbar, in Arava, reminding the nation of, as we move forward, maybe remember a little bit of some of the experiences in the past. Now, it's pointed out by the Balei Mussar, by Rav Chaim Shmulevitz and others, that even though the nation had to hear this, and hopefully the nation would understand that the Mussar that was being given, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have to bang anybody over the head and say explicitly, you did X, Y, and Z in a way that would bring shame to the people. But he couched it in these words, in the locations, Arava, Mosuf, Ben Paran, Ben Tofel, etc., as a way of making the message and the lesson more mikabel, more accepted, more nishma, more heard by the people with great sensitivity and great care as far as the feelings, the emotions, and the sort of the psyche of the nation he was speaking to. That's why the Gemara tells us, the Medrash tells us, that Yaakov Avinu didn't want to give Mussar to his children, to Reuven, until he was already on his deathbed, until many, many years later. Why? Because the Medrash says that Yaakov was concerned that if Reuven would hear the strong Mussar his father's giving, he might go off and leave to the Jewish people or leave the brethren. And he betidbat the ace of Achi, Rashi says. He might cling on to ace of my brother. And even though this is a case where Reuven was tzaddik, whatever the mussar was going to be about was probably deserved, one would imagine that Yaakov and Reuven had a very close relationship, that Yaakov could speak to Reuven. But even so, Yaakov was so sensitive to make sure that it was the right time, the right place, said in the right type of way, as opposed to just, you know, letting loose on his children, letting loose on his family members. Again, another example of that incredible sensitivity. The reality is that this mussar, at least to me, is so meaningful and might be one of the great legacies of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe, probably like many of us, had a reason to want to be upset. Moshe was frustrated at this point about the fact that he himself could not enter into the land of Israel because of the rebellion, so to speak, of the nation that drove him to respond by Meribah. Moshe had to spend the last 38, 40 years wandering through the desert. But with all of that, despite the natural inclination, the natural tendency to then respond with anger, perhaps in a way that was not productive, Moshe thought carefully, thoughtfully about the best way of addressing this nation now in a way that was strong, absolutely, but in a way that was thoughtful and a way that could be well received by Am Yisrael. What a beautiful lesson that is for all of us. All of us who in our own way are a Rabbeinu, a teacher, a parent, a grandparent, an instructor, a boss, to always think very carefully as to how to address another person, specifically when we might be upset, and specifically when the other person has erred. This is one of the great lessons of any real giant, of any real person, to be able to put aside a little bit of the feelings and to just act in a way that is respectful and in a way that is appropriate. I know that it's a little bit of not completely related to that point about Mussar, but I remember reading a story a number of years ago about the great Baruch Ber Leibovich, the Ber HaShmuel, who was a famous Rosh Yeshiva in Lithuania before the war, one of the prime premier Talmidim of Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. And Baruch Ber, his daughter, became engaged to one of the top Talmidim in all of Lithuania. I mean, it was a real catch, someone the family was very excited about. But Baruch Ber was a person of very limited means. And during the process of engagement, somebody, a very wealthy family from Vilna, approached this boy, approached this young man, and said, you know, maybe you can marry my daughter, and if you do so, you know, we'll be able to support you for the next X amount of years in your learning and your other endeavors as well. And the young man made a decision saying that, you know what, he wants to join this family from Vilna, with the larger pocketbook. And the family, as unusual as that may sound, asked for a letter from Baruch Ber about this boy. You can find out about him, some type of approbation, a haskama from Baruch Haber. And now Baruch Haber is in a position of writing a letter in support of this young man, as far as this young man marrying to his family, about the very young man who had sort of left his daughter by the altar, so to speak, who had left his family for a different family. And Baruch Haber wrote this letter, a beautiful letter about this boy, about his midos, about his learning, about his yirshmayim. And then he brought the letter to a couple people that he knew, just that they should read it over to make sure that none of his feelings, as far as negative feelings, might have shown themselves in this letter. He knew that he was nogei b'davar. He knew that his family had been hurt by this young man. And he wanted to make sure that he was able to really honestly write all the positives about this young man without letting some of the negative feelings, sort of manifest themselves in a way that would not be productive, in a way that would be hurtful, in a way that would not be helpful for anybody. And when I think about that story, I think about Moshe Rabbeinu as well here. Moshe Rabbeinu was not just going to give sort of a blanket mussar and let loose and get angry. He was able to sort of silence some of those feelings to just give the tochacha that was appropriate for this nation in a way that was productive, in a way that would be received by Am Yisrael. It's a beautiful lesson for us, and one of the many, many reasons that now, thousands of years later, we still look back from the life of Moshe, and we proudly call him Moshe Rabbeinu, of the many dozens and hundreds of lessons that have been left us through the legacy of this great man. Thank you, everyone, and have a good day, a good Shabbos, and a meaningful fast on Sunday.